I'm Jason Wright, and this is the Texas Titans Podcast, where I sit down with peak performers from all walks of life, looking for their secrets to success. I hope you enjoy the conversation here on the Texas Titans Podcast. Well, hello, folks, and welcome to this episode of the Texas Titans Podcast. I am really excited to bring to you my conversation with Dan Hooper, the founder and executive director of ScholarShot. What is ScholarShot, you might ask? Well, ScholarShot is an organization dedicated to trying to close the gap between those who finish high school and go on to some form of post-secondary education and those who do not. I want you to focus on this number. 29%. 29%. Only 29% of Texas high school students who graduate go on for some form of post-secondary education. I'm not talking about going getting a bachelor's degree, a four-year degree. I'm talking about even getting a truck driver's certification, a food handler certification. They get nothing. This is a detriment not only to these young adults' lives and their families, but also look at the numbers. We are investing on average $150,000 per child in K through 12 education, only to graduate them from high school and unable to earn a living wage. That is astounding. And so ScholarShot is trying to remedy some of that by mentoring these kids starting around their junior year and getting them thinking about doing things that are not just going to college. Yes, many of the ScholarShot kids end up becoming first-generation college graduates. That is a huge deal. But that's not the only option. What they're not hearing about from their guidance counselors in school is you can actually go and get a food handler certification. You can become get a technical certification to become a machinist, a mechanic, these jobs that are paying incredible wages. For example, did you know that if a high school kid graduates and goes to work at a restaurant, that they're going to make on average around $12 an hour? However, if they go get a food handler certification, they can demand $21 an hour immediately in the marketplace. But most of these kids don't know that and they don't understand that. So ScholarShot is trying to expose them to all the options for post-secondary education they have. It's a phenomenal organization. And Dan Hooper, who was a successful business executive, he was a consultant for ISI. Dan's background is data. His job was to take massive amounts of data and tell a story with that data. In business today, everything is quantifiable. Data backs up all sorts of actions and execution, and Dan was that guy. And so he approaches this from a very analytical and data mindset that allows him to look and go, okay, if we've got this many kids that are not going on to a post-secondary education of any kind, what is that doing to the Texas economy? And it's just, he's a phenomenal guy. Let me give you a little bit about Dan's background. Dan founded ScholarShot in 2009. He has been a successful business growth executive in Dallas since 1979. He left a very successful business consulting firm, which was ISI, that he helped manage to grow since 2003. And he left to serve as the executive director of ScholarShot. ISI had been experiencing record growth in the past 6 years whenever he decided to depart. It's Dan's vision and passion which helped create the ScholarShot model and Degree Dallas campaign. So he was successful in the private sector. He was successful in the for-profit sector, and he wanted to take his knowledge, his business acumen, his ability to analyze data and use it for better outcomes and create ScholarShot and help these young people's lives. I think that is a remarkable endeavor. I think that Dan is a remarkable guy. I love this story. And I hope that after listening to this conversation, that you will find a way to get involved with ScholarShot. You can do that at scholarshot.org. But until then, sit back and listen. And hey, this is a great conversation to learn a lot about the state of education in our Lone Star State, and it's not unique to Texas. This is a problem throughout the entire country. So with that, folks, thank you so much for joining us here on the Texas Titans Podcast. It's the holiday season. I hope you're enjoying it. I know I am. I hope you had a happy Thanksgiving. I know I am thankful that you have chosen to spend this time here listening to the Texas Titans podcast. Thank you. All right, Dan Hooper, welcome to the Texas Titans podcast. I am so glad to have you here, sir.
Great to be with you.
So,
stock market's at a record high today, and Thanksgiving in a day and a half, so a lot to be grateful for.
And you know, the remarkable thing about all this, Dan, is that, yeah, stock market is at a record high. Thanksgiving still coming. Christmas will be around the corner. We're still in the middle of a global pandemic. It's this weird time of good things, weird things. But man, here you and I get to sit and have a great conversation about something that we are both passionate about. All in all, there's a lot to be thankful for.
There is. So what are we going to talk about?
Well, man, this is your day today. So, okay. So anyone that listens to this podcast knows that I have a keen interest in education. I mention it probably more than the audience would like, but it's something that I'm just very passionate about. The fact that I am a first generation college graduate. I believe that education can completely transform the trajectory of a family's, you know, for generation after generation. And so the space you're in, I'm really interested in because, one, there are a lot of kids, you know, there's a starting line, and then there's a lot of kids that start way behind that starting line. And you get to see up close a lot of these kids, the homes that they come from, and the obstacles they face toward, you know, whenever they're looking toward trying to possibly get an education beyond high school. And I also think that alternatives to the four-year bachelor degree are something we need to talk more about as it relates to education. So with that, here's what I want to do. We want to know about you. You know, the Texas Titan podcast, yes, it's topical. I love today that we have more of a topical conversation about something I'm passionate about. But you're an executive director. You're pursuing a passion that you didn't set out to do. That's why, you know, that will come out in the story. You didn't set out to be the executive director of Scholar Shot and help kids, you know, go from challenging socioeconomic backgrounds into, you know, post-secondary education. So I want to talk about that journey, talk about leadership. I got to believe, you know, there's a lot of entrepreneurial themes that always come out on the Texas Titans podcast. I want to talk about that because you've built this organization. And so let's talk about some of those things. But with that, let's just get started on how you were built, where you're from, what your former life was like, and the path that led you to Scholar Shot. And then let's get into talking about some how we're going to fix the American education system, and in particular, Texas.
Well, thanks for having me on. I'm a boring topic, so I'll just give you that real quickly. But Scholar Shot, which is the nonprofit that pulled me out of the business community, is really exciting. So I grew up in Connecticut, right next to the island of Rhode Island, moved to what we thought was the Midwest, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, in my high school years, and met my wife in college and eventually moved to Dallas in 1979 and had a good career here, primarily in the data-driven world. I was a partner in a consulting firm, a boutique firm here with about 35 employees known as ISI. It's a great firm. And the primary deliverable there was data strategy. And so when I watched my wife putting our kids through college, and you're seeing this as well, a week doesn't go by where you don't have to, you have to respond to something. And if you don't respond, you can't renew for the next semester. You can't enroll. And it's so I was involved in an inner city ministry here known as the Washington Street Mission. And we had great kids. As we said, we've taken thugs and turned them into studs. And I wonder when they would graduate from high school, who's at home to help them get through college or navigate a step to a career. And sure enough, being a data person, I started digging into the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board, which is a like a Fort Knox of data. They have piles of spreadsheets. They just don't tell the story very well, but 9 out of 10 of these kids that enroll in college in the state of Texas drop out.
Yeah.
So that's 86% of the Dallas County high school graduates each year. It's 6 to 7 out of 10 of every high school across the state. And so it's the majority of our kids. And so the bottom line is we are doing a very poor job in our state transferring kids from high school to a livable wage. And that's what Scholarshot's all about.
So let's get into some of that data, because one of the things that was surprising to me when you and I spoke before was the fact that, first of all, there's so few kids that are actually pursuing things beyond the four-year degree. It's almost like, well, we don't go to college in my family. We haven't gone to college. They've never had that modeled. And in their mind, it is that's the only option. It's either I don't go at all, or I have to go to a four-year program and get a bachelor's degree, a liberal arts degree of some kind, whatever the case may be. Talk to us a little bit about the lack of certificate programs and associate's degrees being pursued, and how that is actually hampering the state.
Well, we have at Scholarshot, we have 101 first-generation college graduates. You see pictures of many of them behind me. Only 3 of those kids got a vocational certificate.
Wow.
And not surprisingly, those 3 made more money day one and every day thereafter than our 4-year graduates have.
Yeah.
So, you know, think about getting a plumber or an HVAC tech to your house. It's $80 an hour just to come see.
And, oh, yeah.
And our state desperately needs a certified workforce with some post-secondary, post-high school credential. Of the 2018 kids that graduated in Texas high school, that's the most recent pool of data that we have, only 2% got a vocational certificate. And we ought to see that at 15 or 20%.
Yeah.
Particularly when you consider that less than half the kids even made an attempt at a post-secondary credential, anything after high school.
Yeah. And so what are most of the kids that, okay, so you've got this gap between those that actually, there's a, you know, very, very small percentage are actually pursuing some sort of a trade and some certification to practice the trade. Then you have the higher number, even within Scholarshot, that are going out and pursuing the 4-year degree, but most of which are, well, let's talk about that. Of those that are, that you guys are helping to get in, you know, to pursue education beyond high school, of those that are pursuing the 4-year degree, how are their statistics versus the statewide statistics of dropouts, of college dropouts? Because, you know, I got to think now they've gone and they've taken a year, a couple of semesters, they've dropped out. They don't have a tangible skill, basically, like those that pursued the trade certification. What are your numbers look like, and kind of what is the process? What is the pathway look for that Scholarshot student that's gone under the 4-year degree?
Well, the state's number, which is very close to the national number, mm-hmm. is that 9 out of 10 don't yep. complete. 9 out of 10 low income kids that attempt college drop out. And really the worst thing we can do to any of our kids is have them drop out of any school anywhere, because when they do, their grants are frozen for at least a year. They'll have debt that, and they rarely have any idea how much debt. And it's on average $25,000. So they're credit unworthy. And they almost always owe their departing school some funds, and it's usually in the thousands of dollars. And even if it's only $20, you can't re-enroll anywhere else if you owe another school in the country anything. So their transcripts are frozen. It's basically game over. And we've wasted our $150,000 K-12 investment in those kids when that happens. So Scholarshot has reversed that. We have a 96% degree completion rate for our kids. Wow. It's all about getting students started in the right school. Those that need remediation need to make a two-year start. And there are many other benefits to a two-year start. One is you can get a vocational certificate in a year. You can get an associate degree in 2 or 3 years and be employed.
Yeah.
But if you want to go on to complete a four-year degree, then you'll be a junior somewhere with no debt. You've gotten your GPA up and your confidence up and any remediation out of the way. But sadly, our model right now is to discourage high school graduates from pursuing a start in community college. And there are a couple of reasons for that. But
yeah, why is that?
Well, one is community colleges, our four-year universities have about a 50% completion rate for everybody, which is not very good. When you consider would you go into a restaurant if they said, hey, only half the people come out are well?
Yeah, right.
Be out of business in a 24-hour period.
Yeah, right.
And the two-year schools have about a 35% six-year completion rate, which is not good. But still, that's not a valid reason to talk a kid who has zero expected family contribution, who needs some math or reading or writing remediation, to talk them out of a two-year start. And we have transferred, right now we have 70% of our kids in a four-year program, 30% in a two-year program. The majority of those two-year kids will transfer on and complete in a four-year school. So okay. It's doable. Our average debt right now per graduate is below $1,500. And as opposed to the average debt of a dropout of $25,000, we need to change our model.
Well, and I think that's one of the things that too, a lot of the listeners may or may not know is that debt never goes away, especially if it is federally subsidized or backed, right? I mean, one, it is not protected in a bankruptcy. So let's say that you run up a bunch of credit cards, you lose everything else. That one, it doesn't go away. There is no negotiating for pennies on the dollar. If you owe student loan debt, it's going to be with you until you satisfy it. And the thought of the double whammy of having the debt and not even a degree to show for it, much less a job to actually pay the debt, that has got to just be an albatross around the necks of these poor kids wow, what a shame. And why is that happening? Because I know that, like, where I am in Tyler, when it comes, I guess it's sometime in the spring, you start driving by and you see the little sniper signs out in front of the schools with all the universities, that are going to be visiting there doing college day or whatever. And they obviously have a lot of recruiters that go out nationwide to recruit kids to their programs. They have marketing budgets, I'm sure, that are pretty substantial. Is there still a stigma for a high school to send their kid to their kids to a trade school? Do they feel that they're telling they're giving the child lower than expected expectations by saying, hey, you may want to try to get an HVAC certification and actually go get a job? What is it that's happening in the schools that is not supporting these kids going out and finding a path to, like you mentioned, a livable wage as opposed to a useless degree?
Well, in a word, it is advisement. It is the advisement in our high schools. And in all fairness to our advisors, they will tell you, look, I'd love to do college and career guidance, but I'm in crisis mode here. I've got kids coming in who dad's been reincarcerated, so she needs to work more, or she thinks she might be pregnant, or he's got to protect a younger sibling from an abusive male in the family. And that's very true. There's no question. That's where a lot of the hours go. But But even still, the voices that do speak to our kids push four-year schools at the expense and risk of the kids. It makes the high school look better. It feels better. Yeah. But nobody looks to see, well, where is that young man or woman a year or two later?
Yeah.
And we've got to fix that. At Scholarshot, we call this the Texas career gap. Mm-hmm. And that is that, again, in the most recent pool of data, only 29% of our 350,000 kids that graduate a year, which, by the way, is 10% of all the graduates from high school in the country. So it's a big number.
Yeah.
But only 29% ever succeed in earning anything after high school. And 2% with a vocational certificate, which, by the way, is paid for. You know, yeah. Dallas County, the Dallas County Promise, if you want to go get a one-year certificate, books and tuition are paid for by the Dallas County Promise. Tarrant County is starting up what's called Tarrant 2 and 3 through. Alamo County has the Alamo Promise. Houston has a similar promise. And with Pell Grants and the Texas Grant for these kids, books and tuition are covered. So why not take advantage of that and let kids go down a path that's successful rather than setting them up for a tragic failure? And it's costing them and us a fortune.
Yeah. And you know what it reminds me of is, you know, during the mortgage crisis that happened, I steer very clear of politics on the Texas Titans podcast. Let's just say government policy, who cares where it came from, but there were government policies put in place that said everybody needs to have a home, everybody, no matter what your credit worthiness is or whatever, and you need to be able to get a mortgage. You need to be able to borrow the money to buy your home. Well, a lot of people did that. Again, no one stopping to think, well, what's going to happen if all these people, they get the loan, and the mortgage lenders, they make the money, but the people that are getting the loans can't actually finish their obligation of actually paying for the house. And we saw this dramatic crisis. And then what you have right now going on in America, it's, 2.4 trillion or 1.4? How much is student loan debt do we have?
1.7 trillion.
Yeah, but, you know, 1.7 trillion, you know, no big deal, you know. 1.7 trillion in student loan debt right now, and not all the degrees to show for it. So it goes back to a massive scale of what I was talking about on the individual level, because we have for so long in our country thought everyone needs to go to college. And just that sentence, it's not everyone needs to finish post-secondary education. Everyone needs to finish college. Everyone needs to get skills to be employed. They need to finish something that will secure them a job. Instead, it's just everybody needs to go to college. And I have read the statistics where, you know, and again, as you move down the socioeconomic line, both from income, minorities, you know, what are these different communities, the completion rate of college is just terrible. And it's even at higher levels. If you look at law school, you know, whenever they push to just get different demographics into college, well, that's where we stop. We got them in, but they never look at whether or not they're actually completing the degree and actually getting employed. So how do we fix this thing? I mean, obviously with Scholarshot you're trying, but how do we shift that paradigm to get these the high schools, the educators, and the students to go, hey, it's don't just go to college. Let's figure out how to make you some money. What do you think the answer is?
Well, you know, firstly, back to your comment on government policies, the states generally do a better job with effective legislation than the federal government
absolutely
has ever done. And Texas passed in 2019 what's known as House Bill 3. And it's a business solution to this education issue. It provisions what's known as CCMR, college career or military readiness. And every kid in the state that meets the CCMR qualification can can earn a bonus for their high school between $2,000 and $5,000. That's a fair amount of money. That's a couple of million dollars for a decent sized high school.
Yeah.
Which could then afford some career and college advisors. Although I'm told most of the ISDs, that money, any money that comes in like that's going to be spent by we got to repair the walls that are falling down kind of thing.
Sure, sure.
But what really needs to happen is our business community has to speak up and be heard to say, look, I don't need kids from, and this is not to put down any of our private schools, but I don't need an SMU graduate or a Purdue or a Vanderbilt. I'll take kids from Texas A&M Commerce. In fact, those kids worked harder, put themselves through school, have a little more work ethic. I don't, in fact, what they're really saying is, I don't care where you got your degree. Do you have a degree? Can you do the work? When can you start? That's the interview.
Right.
But I think also our state needs to establish minimum standards of excellence or best practices around advisement. You know, the Texas top percent, 10% rule is was intended to get a lot of kids from rural high schools and low income backgrounds into the big 4-year schools. And what it's done is it's gotten a lot of those kids in not knowing that they're $15,000 or $16,000 a year short and not even aware that their 820 or 840 on the SAT is 30% below the median level of their fellow freshmen.
Right.
It starts with the business community saying, this is what I need from the local community colleges and universities, and backed up with a couple of stop gaps in these areas like advisement, where there's no definition of success.
Yeah.
And it comes down to the what feels good rather than what is good.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is, unfortunately, the feel good generally leads to bad policy every time. And, you know, you mentioned something there that you going back to this whole student loan debt problem, you know, one of the biggest reasons why there's no incentive for universities to manage their spending is because there's very little tied to. Now, I do believe, and you know this better than I, if they have a certain percentage of students, be it, I guess, dropouts or graduates that are defaulting on their loans, then are there any ramifications for that university to receive, you know, for the students coming in to receive student loans? Because to me, that would be an easy fix. It's like, again, you're focused on the outcome. Say, okay, we're willing to loan this individual money to go to the University of Texas because 80% of the kids that go to the University of Texas borrow money to do it, get out, and they pay their loan back. Is there any incentive at all for – there's not, right, for the universities?
No. In fact, the only policing authority is the accreditation process. And that's a whole nother topic that's very flawed, but basically it's the fox watching the hen house, because if I'm University A in a certain region who asks for an audit, well, University B comes in and does that, knowing that in 6 months or a year, University A is going to audit them. So there's one case of a school in the Southeast that for 20 years abused the federal lending policies. And they had, I don't remember the exact number, but it was well in the low to mid 20s in terms of a percentage of their graduates that were paying their debt back. And the accreditors finally shut that school off after 20 years. You know, that, for those of us in the business community, we'd look at that and say, that should have happened on year two or three. And the data is there. We can show every college by its percentage of graduates that are on time with their debt 5 years later. So the data is there, and a couple of our secretaries of education over the last few administrations have tried to make that data public and actionable, and have gotten significant pushback from donors and, you know, advocates of the big schools.
They just don't want to
be held accountable. And that's the other piece of this. You know, if you take out a loan, or I take out a loan and I default on my car or house, the bank will take the car or house back. As you mentioned earlier, there is no collateral here, but the universities and schools keep all the money. There's no penalty. So if I extend to you a $4,500 loan in August and you drop out in October, I keep that money and you've got to pay it back. So there's not a lot of incentive there for the universities to do the right thing.
And not to mention, a lot of these universities are sitting on multi-billion dollar endowments that they're just sitting there just collecting enough interest to cover, you know, the operating expenses just on interest for like a smaller regional school, and which is just kind of maddening. Now, here's something that I would love to be able to tell the audience, because, I got to believe that many of my listeners are like me, who we've gone through the process. Our kids are in college. Oh, well. But let's say that you're in your mid-20s or whatever, you're about to start a family. And one of the things that I've spoken to several university presidents here in the last year or so, and saying, you know, it's not just Stephen F. Austin State University competing with the University of Texas Tyler or Texas State or whatever, but now you are competing with the idea of the kids saying, I'm not going to college. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to be an entrepreneur. I've seen that, one, they see people like, and granted, this is anecdotal and these are the outliers, but this is the world we live in now. They see Mark Zuckerberg. They see Ryan Holiday. They see Bill Gates. They see Steve Jobs. They see all these incredible billionaires that they didn't finish college. But they also see these influencers, and they see other individuals finding niches and ways to make money right away. So they're seeing that, but I think they look at it and they see these kind of cool ways to make money, as opposed to looking at what we've talked about, which are kind of the dirty jobs, kind of the micro dirty jobs, which as an investor, I love those businesses. Because you know what? Everyone is always going to want their air conditioner to work, like you mentioned earlier. They're always going to want to be able to flush their toilet. They are always going to want their car to run. Those jobs are not going away. And so how do you convey the message to a young person, or what is the effort being made? And maybe we'll just get into what ScholarShot is doing at the earliest possible point of contact with the student to say, hey, look, here's the deal. If you want to make $100,000 a year, here's a much quicker path right now through a non-traditional route. How do you get to convey that message to the students, and when do you allow them to, and then how do we start to get these young people to realize you're probably not going to be a multi-million dollar Instagram influencer, but you can make a very good living doing real work and providing a real needed service? Where does that happen, and how's that process flow? And then take that and just go, I know there's a long drawn out question, but then go into kind of ScholarShot's path, what you guys were conceived of, how you get these kids, and then kind of the if I'm a student and I enter the ScholarShot ecosystem, how you work with me.
Well, what you're describing with the Bill Gateses and the Michael Dells of the world is an issue that's very real in our high schools, and that is you've probably seen or heard the movie Waiting for Superman.
Oh gosh, yes. Everyone listening to this podcast should go watch Waiting for Superman.
So it's a compelling story, but you're really talking about one out of thousands of kids that makes that leap. And for the kids that ScholarShot sees, and these are the kids that graduate from Tarrant County, Dallas County, Collin County, Rockwall, Kaufman, we see kids from the lowest economic segment. They typically are from households below 30,000 in total household income a year. Mm-hmm. And yet they have aspirations and desires, and they are sadly perfectly set up to fail by the system. When we see them, we let them know, okay, you got accepted because of your high school rank and GPA into UT Arlington and UNT, but your SAT scores are 25% below the average. And more importantly, you've got a $12,000 a year gap here and a $14,000 a year gap there. Mm-hmm. And this is in May and June of their senior year in high school. We see hundreds of high school seniors every year. And they look at us like, wait a minute, how can I have what do you mean a $14,000 financial gap? Well, you got $11,000 in grants, you're going to get $3,500 in loans, and it's a $25,000 a year school. And these kids look at us in May and June, right around their high school graduation, and say, why is Scholarshot telling me this? Why didn't my counselor, why didn't my teacher tell me this? Yeah. Why didn't the college tell me this? And it comes back to what feels good rather than what is good.
Yeah.
And we can talk more and more about that, but these are great kids. These kids are all first generation. They've survived and overcome immensely more than anything my kids or your kids likely experienced or saw. Yeah. And kept their focus and their head on straight to get through high school, only to be set up to fail in college. And that is where we focus, because it's such a tragic and costly setup.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of like, you know, not to get too deep here, but it's kind of like, you know, I guess Moses never being able to walk to the promised land. You get so close, you know, and you've overcome such odds, and then to not get to take that final step is tragic. So tell me how Scholarshot was conceived, how you got involved, and here's where I want to go into kind of the personal, the hacks and habits of the professional, because this was a big decision for you, I know, to take on this role and to do what you're doing now. So talk about what that process was like, kind of what led you up to Scholarshot, and how you made the decision to be where you are now.
Well, yeah, it's a Scholarshot got started, A, because it's a data thing, and that sort of scratches my itches, and B, it's a God thing, and that's harder. That's unfortunately for me a lot harder. But as I mentioned, the ministry I was involved in downtown Dallas, we saw kids turn their lives around and then wonder, you know, once they've graduated from high school, hey, I'd love to help you, but we got another pool of kids coming up we got to focus on. But once the data came together, I started talking to a couple of fellow business people and community folks who said, well, let's try something. And I got introduced to a terrific guy that runs a West Dallas after school mentoring program. And we took three kids in 2010. We took three kids in, and we took 3 to 5 kids a year. And we got the on track or graduation rate up to about 50%, but we didn't know how to answer. Why did UT Arlington take all of my hours from El Centro College, but UNT only took 65% of them? I don't know. That's an articulation agreement. Well, let's look at the we just didn't know these things. And we brought in a young guy, a first generation college grad, who had been doing college advising and had seen a lot of the flaws. And he put systems in place where we've got to 90%, and now we're at 96%. We take in 50 kids a year, We'll get 1,000 applications in. It's difficult to make that selection, but those 50 kids get a scholarship from us of up to $6,000 a year. But the biggest piece of what they get from us, much more important than the financial support, is they get assigned an academic manager who is also a first-generation college grad. They're of color, and they can look at these kids in their freshman year and say, look, I was you 8 years ago.
Yeah,
I did it. Here's what we need to do. And just as an aside, the biggest gap in this step from high school to a livable wage is the social-emotional gap. Kids that come from a low-income background, they know how to perform and make things happen, but there's a voice in their head always saying, I'm not really worthy of this. Mm-hmm. I'm of color. I grew up in a poor home. There were issues going on. I'll give this a try, but this is not really going to happen.
Right.
And sure enough, that first quiz or test in their freshman year, their classmates are high-fiving. It was pretty easy. They're partying on weekends. These folks are working on the weekends. And the tape starts playing of ultimately saying, I'm not worthy of this. Mm. And our academic managers are there to say, oh, yes, you are worthy. You need to pick your game up.
Yeah.
This is not a fight or flight response, which they've learned very well through their 18 years. It's, I need to take my game up a notch.
Yeah.
And once they see that succeeding, that's what begins the process of, I can do this and I'm worthy.
Wow. Yeah. And, you know, to me, going back to the employer, I've had this conversation with folks at SFA, you know, because I sit on an advisory board there, and I was like, you know, so many of my fraternity brothers, in fact, who have gone on to be incredibly successful entrepreneurs. And you go, well, why is that? Well, because McKinsey and Company is not going to be showing up to Stephen F. Austin State University in Nacogdoches, Texas to recruit. Bain is not going, Goldman Sachs, they're not going to go to Nacogdoches to recruit from Stephen F. Austin State University. So you have this chip on your shoulder, and you have to kind of make your own way. And so I got to believe that these kids that go through the scholarship program, they have this academic manager working with them and encouraging them and mentoring them. I got to believe that if they are able to navigate those waters, that they've got to come out and be some of the toughest, most disciplined, and more importantly, speaking for myself, just so grateful for what you have, to understand what you've, not a pat on the back, look at what I've achieved, but oh my goodness, you look at the landscape of the entire world and how many people are educated, quote unquote, you know, formally educated. What a gift it is. So I got to believe that these kids are truly special as compared to, like you said, the kid who's a third generation college grad out of, you know, to pick on one of my other alma maters, SMU, you know, like, oh, well, that's just what we did in our family. We're supposed to. And then they're the ones I would think would show up to work. Well, what do you mean I'm not getting a raise in my first 6 weeks? You know, So yeah, talk about some of the kids that have gone on. That do you guys keep up with them, and do they come back? And is there any kind of encouragement or possibly a stipulation that says, hey, if you go through the scholarship program, we want you to come back and, you know, pour back into this program that's helped you?
Well, yes, that we love to have our graduates come back and be mentors. So mm-hmm. We try to assign. We have 156 active scholars right now. I think we have all but 50 with mentors assigned. We are engaging with our graduates to come back and speak to high school seniors. In the COVID era, that's a little trickier, but you know, they are great kids. They have fought the structure, if you will, and the yeah. accountability that their academic managers put on them, because that's not anything that they've really had to live sure. with. But by the time they get into their junior and particularly senior year, they begin to see, wow, where are the kids I graduated high school from? Or How did my siblings fare when they attempted college? Not well, as opposed to I'm actually going to graduate. You know, I interned this summer for a potential employer and made more money than I ever thought possible. And it's really exciting to go over job offer letters with our graduates. Our graduates' starting salaries are in the $35,000 to $55,000 a year range. And it's just, you know, it's great to sit with them and say, look, you're going to make $52,000. Let's take out taxes. This is how much you're going to have disposable a month. And, you know, these kids will say, nobody in my family ever had that from years of savings. Yeah. So, you know, that's the win. And why not do that for every one of our high school graduates rather than taking half of them and throwing them off this cliff called college?
Yeah.
And again, it's all back to the waiting or looking for Superman. It's okay. There is one kid who's going to make it out of the 500 that just graduated from this ISD, but the other 499 are subject to this tragic setup. So.
Wow. All right. So let's get into to you. How did you end up at Scholarshop? Because I love stories like this where you could be doing it. And let's face it, you could be somewhere making a lot more money. You could still be in the consulting business. You were doing just fine. But I love to bring about the stories on this program because it's one of the things whenever I talk to undergrads or just even if it's high school students, my own daughters, I tell them, find your purpose, find something you're passionate about. The money will come. And by the way, if you end up in a role where I've told both my daughters, I'm like, if you end up in a job that you make 40 grand a year, but you absolutely love it, then guess what? You will craft for yourself a $40,000 a year lifestyle that will allow you to do that thing because you found your purpose, you're passionate about it. So you're now obviously living a life of purpose and a vocation that has a strong purpose, deliberate purpose. How did that happen? And what have been the results since making that leap from, you know, kind of the business world to the nonprofit world?
Well, in 2016, our board, and we have a terrific board, agreed to do a strategic afternoon evening session. And the number one thing that came out of that was we need a full-time executive director. I was doing it part-time at, you know, not charging for it, maybe 20 hours a week, working on the weekends. And I loved it. So it wasn't work. It was a joy. And we all agreed, let's get on the warpath and find a young, energetic person to take over as executive director. Several of the board members came to me and said, Dan, that's a real risk. You know, let's think about that. And, you know, the next sentence you can anticipate was, we'd really like for you to think about doing it. Yeah. And so I addressed the two stickiest obstacles in that process, my spouse, my wife of 40 years, and my partners at ISI. And I was able to say to my partners, look, I'm doing this. It's a God thing, so you can't argue. And that I dodged a few flying objects, but with my wife, it was, and she works full time. She runs a title company and has done well, but she's like, hey, what when's my parade kind of thing? Right. So we prayed about it and one thing led to another. And I took over January 1st of 2017. And I'll tell you, I have not looked back, and I work more hours. I still stay in contact with ISI. I'm hoping they'll do a project for us here in the next month or two. But yeah, it was the biggest thing is when people say, "What do you do?" You know, and they look at an older guy like me and think maybe he's retired or whatever. And when I tell them I run a nonprofit, you know, there's kind of like a, oh, Like, that's not very interesting. Right. And, you know, it was much more interesting to say, well, I'm a partner in a consulting firm.
Oh, yeah.
But the truth of the matter is, it's been an amazing blessing. And to see these kids who are behind me on the wall become the new standard for their families and cousins and friends, and to see them overcome the fight or flight mode to the, hey, if I ask questions, it's not a bad thing. It's a good thing.
Right.
That is significantly more rewarding than helping an executive team put a dashboard together to answer questions about what their business did last night. So no complaints, truly. And I would encourage anybody else who's on the fence to not necessarily leap, but see if you can make it work out.
All right. So tell me about some of the challenges in getting ScholarShot up and running, because, like, I don't care if it's for-profit, nonprofit, it's a startup. There's challenges. You got to be able to turn the lights on. The phone's got to be able to ring. So what were some of the challenges that you guys faced as you started started ScholarShot, and how did you overcome whatever obstacles that were put in your way?
Well, like any business, you got to raise the money.
Yep.
And we had scholarships to pay. So it's not just to cover employees, but I'll tell you the biggest challenge, and you touched on this at the very beginning of our conversation, education is such a big topic. Mm-hmm. And the overwhelming focus of funders and policymakers and practitioners is in the K-12 area. Hey, if kids aren't reading by the third grade, then they're not going to be on their grade level all the way through elementary and high school. If we don't have pre-K, and if we aren't getting kids to where they can do Algebra 1 by the time they graduate, then they're not going to succeed, and so forth. And, you know, these funders that lay out millions of dollars a year, private foundations, corporate foundations, looked at ScholarShot and said, well, we're helping kids graduate from high school. Why do we need to, you know, that's good enough. So the big hurdle that we had to overcome is high school is no longer enough.
Yeah.
20 years ago, it was a ticket to the middle class for most kids.
Yep.
Today alone, it's a ticket to poverty.
Yeah.
And so some of our funders view ScholarShot even today as, you guys are the outlier. We only focus on pre-K, early childhood services, but we get that if we don't fill this final step at the 99-yard line of some post-secondary credential, then we've wasted everything upstream.
Right.
And that's been very rewarding, but it's still a challenge. And, you know, was on a conversation with a major foundation here in Dallas that only does K-12, and they've told us, come back again. But each year it's like, we're just focused on kids up to the age of 18. And so and sadly, I would have thought there would have been more doing what we do, which is the last yard.
Yeah.
The post-secondary credential.
Yeah.
Our community colleges need it. DCCCD, now Dallas College, will tell you that their vocational classrooms, whether if you want to be a culinary certificate holder or a health tech or HVAC, that their classrooms are largely empty. We need to fill those seats, and our economy needs it. You know, even post-COVID, our economy needs a certified workforce.
Well,
so
Go ahead. Now, I was going to say, I'm hoping that the trends are moving in your direction, because, you know, like with, you know, Google and some of the large corporate players are starting to themselves see this need, because they need workers. They need knowledge workers that they just can't, you know, they just can't find enough folks. And with Coursera and some of the delivery systems, I think that you know, one of the things I've said on this show a multitude of times since COVID hit is that a lot of things that were going to happen 10 years from now have just been fast forwarded. They've been pushed up. And I think education is definitely one of those. And, you know, I think without sounding, it sounds accusatory, but higher education to a certain degree has been exposed as a result of this. You know, as a dad paying an exorbitant amount of money for one of his kids to, well, both of them, it costs a lot of money, but, you know, Abby going to the University of Colorado, she's been sitting in her apartment taking Zoom classes. And, you know, I think there's just a lot that, okay, everything's up, everything's on the table now. And I'm hoping that with some of these larger institutions like Google lending some, you know, some, I don't want to say cachet, whatever the case may be, to, hey, get out of high school and come learn something that's truly applicable right now as quick as you can learn it and make money, will help with that narrative, because there's so many things around education that are so archaic that have not been shaken up and changed for so long. So I got to believe that's probably part of what you're facing, Dan, is just that old mindset. Well, this is just the way we've always done it, which is really quite a shame.
It is. And, you know, these are big institutions. They're run by two diametrically opposed entities. One is the governance board, the board of regents.
Yeah.
And the other is the board of academics.
Yeah.
And they don't communicate very well. And unfortunately, the students who are the customer, our kids are the customer, are not treated like a customer.
Oh, absolutely not.
The customer are the teachers who get tenure. The research projects and other meaningful, valuable things, but the ultimate customer is the student. And that's changing in some ways. So UNT Dallas, Bob Mong, Bob used to be the editor of the Dallas Morning News. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't have a PhD, but he took over that university and said, we're in Southern Dallas. This is our market. We don't need to recruit all over the state. Let's recruit from the local high schools here, and let's produce a four-year degree for $7,800 a year all in.
Yeah.
That's, we need more of that. And, you know, again, employers, if they're looking at two candidates and one's a, let's say a Baylor or a Rice grad, and the other is a UNT Dallas grad, most employers I know are going to lean towards the UNT Dallas kid because A, they feel like, well, this is from my community.
Right.
And B, this kid's worked his way through school.
Yeah.
I'm going to give him a chance. And, that's a valuable message that's got to get out.
No, I could not agree more. I mean, and you know, to the parents out there and anyone listening, again, I'm not an expert, but I am I have sought to truly self-educate on this. Unless you're one of the Ivies, now grant, because there are, it's almost like a huge toll you have to pay to go to some of the employers I mentioned previously. It's just a sifting process. If you could get into Harvard, likelihood that you did something special, you're gonna, regardless. It's just a sifting process. It's to shorten the stack of applicants for those companies. But if you, like my daughters, if you went to the University of Colorado, the University of Alabama, and you're in Dallas, Texas, no one's really going to care. Then you just have to rely on that school. You got to hope that the Deloitte practice in Dallas, which, by the way, happens to be run by a Stephen F. Austin State University lumberjack. But if you if you're applying for a job at Deloitte in Dallas and you graduated from the University of Alabama, well then, unless that hiring manager happened to be, you know, go to be a Buffalo from Colorado or the University of Alabama, it really doesn't mean that much, you know? And so I think right now is a great moment in history of education for like what we've been talking about, the certifications, the two-year associate's degrees, and the regional universities. I think this is their time to shine. And And I do think employers are wisening up to some of the things that you're saying. How do you scale ScholarShot? How do you get it to? Because I think it's and do are there other nonprofits that you know of that you're able to trade best practices with? I would love to see something like this out in East Texas, because I can tell you, I actually went through a program, a leadership program, and one of the individuals I went that was in my cohort was worked for a foundation at the time, and they delivered scholarships. And what we're talking about is part of one of the things that just shocked me. She told me that basically they just have to apply, and if they get the scholarship, that's it. And I said, "Well, what happens?" I said, "What happens after they're in school? Do you guys make sure that they keep getting the money to make sure that they're successful?" She said, "No, there is no stipulations. Just apply." No real academic credentials or anything. You get in, you get the scholarship, and we don't really focus on whether you finish or not. How do you scale what you guys are doing? How do we get this word out? What can this audience do to help?
Well, that's always a pressing question. And interestingly, in the nonprofit world, there's a tremendous amount of pressure on scale. You know, how do you do this for 1,000 people and cut your costs by 30%. And our mode, if you will, of operating is we're going to offer our best practices to the state and to policymakers to improve outcomes for tens of thousands of kids. But operationally, we're going to stay a small entity taking 50 plus or minus kids a year in, because that's enough of a pool of data to tell us what's working and what's flawed.
Right.
And so ScholarShot has on its website, scholarshot.org, the Texas University Report Card, which grades our 36 public universities in the state, A through F, on how well they engage first-generation low-income kids. And it's a quantitative and qualitative analysis. So that's one step. The second step is this Texas career gap, where we want to study and make policy recommendations to our legislators, probably in 2023, on this advisement gap and issue. We're thinking most likely we need to develop an online application where any high school senior in the state can say, here are my financial and academic credentials. Make three recommendations for me to maximize my potential in the state. Or for the 51% of our high school kids making no plans.
Yeah.
Well, okay, here's your high school endorsement, which is career oriented. It's healthcare. So get a health care certificate. You're in San Antonio, go to Alamo College. It's paid for, and make that recommendation for our kids.
I love that. All right. So, Dan, let's kind of where the rubber meets the road type deal here. You've got a kid that's about to graduate or is a senior this year, and they're indifferent. They've never even thought about a career path. Where should they go to make the money at this point? Is it healthcare? Is it welding? I know you always hear welders are always held as the example, because I know welders make a lot of money, especially when the oil business is good, but being in our state. So where would it be a good place for a senior in high school that's not going to go to a four-year degree or four-year school to get a job and make some money, go get a certification and make real money?
All right. First of all, to answer your question, I'm just typing off an email here real quickly. Sorry, I'm a few minutes behind on another call.
Not a problem.
But here's the best way to look at that. So, back to our legislators, in 2013, I believe it was, House Bill 5 required that every high school graduate in the state had to have at least one endorsement. There are, I believe, 8 areas of endorsements. An endorsement is just a career-oriented area of interest.
Okay.
And you have to declare your areas of interest in the 7th grade, which is a pretty challenging thing for a 7th grader to at least kind of have an idea. But at a minimum, take those endorsements. Maybe you graduated with two or just one, and put it into this application that we're considering, this online tool. And let's say it's a food service endorsement. Okay, go get a culinary certificate. Mm-hmm. And you're graduating from a Tyler Independent School District high school. Well, you can go to Tyler Junior College and get a food handler certificate, and your salary will go from $10.50 an hour to $21.50 an hour.
Wow.
That's a compelling argument. And yeah. We have to get that information to our high school kids.
Yeah.
It's not available at the moment. If a kid is smart enough to seek it out, he or she could find it, but that conversation doesn't happen in high school. And that's where you start to fix this issue.
Well, Dan, I know that I've taken up nearly an hour, and already, like I said, I'm pushing your schedule as it is. I told you this is a topic that I'm passionate about, and I could sit here and talk to you for hours about it. But with that, first of all, thank you just for broaching this subject with the audience. I mean, higher education is something that I'm passionate about. I want to do anything that we can do. Use like I've told you before, use my podcast as a way to as a platform to get the message out, what we can do to help. But thank you for the work you're doing. And anything that I can do to help you in this challenge, this journey, man, I'm in. I'm so grateful for the work you're doing, and thank you for taking the time to talk to us today.
Jason, I really appreciate that. If any of your listeners want to start a scholar shot in their area, just have them email me or reach out at the scholarshot.org website. We've looked around the state to do that and are very interested in just saying, here's our model. We'll help you get going. And I think East Texas in particular is a prime spot. So Thanks so much for the opportunity and for your interest in all that you do, Jason. And love to follow up with you maybe in a year or so to see where we are.
No, that's we're definitely going to be in touch. This is not your I'm going to bug you. This is not your last appearance on the Texas Titans podcast. So with that, Godspeed. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. And thanks for being on the show.
Same to you, Jason. Thanks so much.
All right, brother.
Take care.
You bet.
Well, that's a wrap on another episode of the Texas Titans podcast. Thank you so much for being here. This has been a Texas Titans Media production. If you will, please take the time to go out to iTunes and give us that ever-coveted 5-star rating. It would mean the world to me. Plus, go to jasonrightnow.com, sign up for the Vitruvian Letter, and most importantly, have an incredible rest of your day and week. Thanks for being here.